And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre. So, on Beacon Hill, recently, we have passed Massachusetts legislature has passed a climate bill, a next generation climate bill. It's a big deal. But that climate bill has gone through lots and lots of revision and review and competing voices speaking to it. Those voices are often, those voices are called lobbyists, right? These are people that lobby for, and I think memory serves lobbying, the term lobbying comes from the people that used to hang around in the lobby of the Capitol down in Washington, D.C., and when the congressman came out, they'd grab him and try and, so the lobbyists were the guys hanging around in the lobby to try and accost the congressman. Anyway, that whole system has moved very far forward and been very much professionalized here in the state of Massachusetts. So the lobbying surrounding any climate legislation is intense, with very different perspectives of people presenting information to congresspeople about what the bill ought to contain. We are fortunate that down at Brown University over the last few months, there's been two researchers have devoted themselves to actually looking at the data that comes out of the Massachusetts State House, actually looking at the number of people who've testified, what they testify about, what industry they came from, to look at all that information to try and get a sense of who is assisting or stopping the passage of climate legislation in the Massachusetts State House. It's a great opportunity to learn how our state house works and what the forces are at play behind things like the next generation climate bill that's slowly marching towards the governor's desk. So to that end, we're happy to be joined by two researchers from Brown University from the Climate and Development Lab there. The first is named Galen Hall. How you doing, Galen?
Good. Thanks for having me, Ted.
That's great. That's great to have you here. And Trevor Culhane, how are you doing?
I'm good. Nice to be here.
That's good. Good to have you here. So tell me, I tried to describe a little bit about the report that you gentlemen have put together. Tell me, did I get it right? I mean, what's the motivation and what were you trying to do with the report?
Yeah, so I think you got it right. What we were trying to do is really to figure out why, when we know Massachusetts has in many ways really strong support for climate action in the state. We know that there's no fossil fuel extraction in the state. A lot of groups are very actively mobilized. And why it is that action has slowed, particularly over the past decade. And so our lab, the Climate and Development Lab, worked first in Rhode Island to kind of understand a similar question. There's some similar dynamics going on down there. And then after doing that, we came up here and we're looking at a similar study and similar questions to really understand, okay, we know action is slowed. Who is trying to slow action? And what are the kind of factors at play, both legislative in general with the state house and also specific with, you know, who wants to slow down action and what they're doing?
Interesting. The thing that we're talking about, just to be clear, because this is sort of a very precise report you've made, what we're talking about is the legislative process, which is the actual manufacture of bills. And I think in your report, you say that's distinct from sort of the regulatory, the people who execute the bills and the governor who sits in the office as the chief executive. For the time being, those people are out of the process. You guys just focused on how does a bill get through the meat factory, shall we say, of the Massachusetts legislature, right? And so what kinds of information did you collect in order to do this study of the lobbying process?
So I can take that one. There were, broadly speaking, two important quantitative data sets that we looked at. And these were testimony that we collected from the State House. So this is like written testimony that people submit in hearings. So every bill gets like a joint committee hearing that's open to the public and people can come in person or they submit written testimony. So we collected written testimony on a set of climate and energy bills that we determined were of some significance because some at least one environmental group listed them as a priority. And this was in the 2013 to 2018 period. So then that was one sort of set of inputs to the legislative process. And then the other main one we looked at was lobbying records. So lobbying is a totally, it's a distinct activity from testimony. Lobbyists show up wherever they want at any time in the legislative process, right? They don't have to come to a hearing. And Massachusetts requires professional lobbyists to record twice per year each bill that they lobbied on, and then write down a position on that bill, like support, oppose, or neutral. Those are the options. So we took record, we took a broader look at any bill at sort of at all related to climate or energy, because we have a had more access to records there, and took lobbying records on all of those bills. So those were sort of the two data sets that we're working with.
That's fascinating. So just to tie it back to what people may have, I think many of our listeners have been in the State House in that big room where they do the TUE committee hearings, right? And it gets stuffy and everyone's sitting on those hard benches, right? I mean, people go up and they have a written testimony, and the whole point of that exercise is for the, this is a joint committee, so it's both senators and representatives, to actually in public accept commentary and written literally testimony from the public, right? And so that's one. And so if any dear listener, if any of you have been up there and seen one of those things in process, that goes into your first stack of data, right? Who actually showed up to speak about a bill. Right, and then right. The flip side is the, interestingly enough, I mean, so the Massachusetts, I understand Massachusetts has fairly aggressive, I think the right word is, a sort of intrusive things about lobbying, right? You have to report a lot of information if you're a lobbyist here. And you're saying you went back and got all that for the last 5 or 6 years for the lobbyists, the guys with the three-piece suits and the cigars and the gold chains in their watch, right? In their pocket. That okay. All right. Yeah. Oh, so you've got these two big sets. And then what do you do with it? Do you read all the testimony, or was the content of the testimony not as, I mean, I would imagine the content of what was said in the testimony is less important than the fact that the testimony existed. And that's what you were counting, right?
Yeah. So for testimony, we mostly counted which bills they testified on and then the positions that they took. And then that way we were able to aggregate, right, that 90% of the testimony was in favor of what environmentalists wanted on climate legislation. We also looked in particular at who was actually opposing climate legislation and actually read their testimony, pulled some quotes, and that really helped us understand who the opposition is. Mm-hmm. But that was a really small piece of testimony. And in general, opposition groups often don't even show up to these hearings. They're choosing, right, to go the lobbying route where they have a lot more power and those connections.
And that is a question I hope we can get to. I mean, the dichotomy of those two routes, right? But yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So then with the what did you put this all in a big Excel spreadsheet and just take averages and regression analysis and stuff, or what did you do with that? I mean, is that literally the kind of thing that you did, right?
Right. So getting into the weeds of the analysis, I guess, right, is what you're asking. We one of the novel things we contributed from an academic perspective was the way that we analyzed the testimony and the lobbying. So in our sort of small field of people who care about energy politics and are trying to figure out who the interest groups are and what they want, it's rare to have good information, good data about what the interest groups in a particular state are doing and what they want, kind of what their policy preferences are, is what we call it. And that's because, despite problems that I'm sure we'll get into about transparency in Massachusetts, Massachusetts actually does better than most states on recording what interest groups lobbied for. There's loads of other transparency problems, but in that sense alone, we have good information here, and it's very hard to get that information elsewhere. And the way we analyzed it was we took every interest group who showed up to lobby on climate legislation. And then I won't go too far into the sort of numerical details now. I totally can if you want. But the sort of high level idea is that you take these records, so you have interest group A, Sierra Club, lobbied against Bill 1, lobbied for Bill 2, you know, and you feed those records into the numerical meat grinder. The meat grinder pumps out clusters of interest groups who have very similar preferences. So that means, like, they tend to lobby the same way on the same bills. And that's a sort of more theoretically principled way of figuring out who acts similarly, who wants similar things. Once you have those groups defined, then you can look at how they relate to each other. You know, who's in those groups, who's the defining actor in each coalition. And that was the sort of novel academic contribution.
I do not make light of your work, but it's sort of the glorified pins in a corkboard with drawing strings, like on the detective TV shows, right? You were showing who's connected to who and how they're connected, but done in this very sophisticated way with, you know, sort of social modeling, right? Which is not a simple thing to do. Okay. Now, let me put you on this. So just because I hope we can have another show to talk about sort of the specifics, but who are the players in the way it broke out? I think you refer to things like renewable energy interest groups, there's utilities, there's, who are the players that fell out? I mean, that all by itself, being able to name the specific groups that are contending over climate legislation is a good thing for people to know, right? So what were they? Or who were they? I mean,
Doing this network analysis, we found that there were 9 coalitions of different groups. And then we kind of broke them up into a green coalition of groups that agree with environmentalists and then an anti-green coalition of groups that oppose. So for a green coalition, we saw the social greens, so it's a lot of environmentalists, conservation and planning, solar, hydro and wind, and then the auto industry, which interestingly mostly showed up for electric vehicle bills. We didn't look a lot at big public transportation bills, so that might be why they ended up over there.
Yeah.
And then for anti-greens, the 4 were utilities. So it's both the utility companies themselves, but also groups like Associated Industries of Massachusetts, which is a big business lobby in the state. We saw the fossil fuel and chemical companies were the 2nd, power generators were the 3rd, and then real estate was the 4th. And really of those 4, the utilities spent the most, were the most involved.
Right.
And really over all of these 9 coalitions, the utilities really dominated in terms of their activities and their influence in the state.
Interesting. So you literally have a sort of a lineup in the rogues gallery, right? You have people you can talk, there's the utility and there's, it's just interesting. The power generators, I mean, again, the whole electric grid, the whole electrical system here in Massachusetts is so arcane, but the people that make the power are distinct from the utilities that distribute the power. And so they have slightly different interests and they fall into opposing or supporting different bills. So they're aligned, but not perfectly. I think it's fascinating to say that the automobile companies are kind of this split personality, Jekyll and Hyde group, right? I mean, they want the EVs, but they probably, all right. So you've got, okay, that's quite interesting. So tell me, you've got the players, you've got the data. What's sort of the top level thing? I mean, when you walk the tweet, the 140 character description of what you found.
So I can start us off on that, and then Trevor can fill in the gaps because I'll probably either say it too quick or I'll ramble off and either way I'll miss something. So, but the sort of top level, the tweet, I guess, is that there's very strong support publicly for climate action in Massachusetts. So we talked about that there's mobilized civil society. People show up individually and in groups to testify for climate legislation. But despite that, there are 3 key factors that tend to delay climate and clean energy in Massachusetts. And I should say our intent is not to think of these as sort of insurmountable barriers, but these are the forces at play that make it more difficult than it otherwise would be to pass a big ambitious bill like we're trying to right now. So the first is that there are those 4 coalitions we talked about. And just the fact that there are broad industry coalitions opposing climate action in Massachusetts who have more money to spend on lobbyists is by itself a large barrier. The second is that the decision-making process in the legislature and outside of it in regulatory agencies is dominated by utilities in Massachusetts. So we can get more into this later, but the advocates have less, again, less money to spend on lobbying, but also less, you could maybe say, legitimacy as advocates among legislators and decision makers than big companies, like big utility companies.
Is that legitimacy tied to the ability to make donations, campaign donations? Is it as simple as that?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So campaign donations were very difficult to analyze, and we ended up leaving them out of the study. And the reason is that if you actually go, you can go to the Office for Campaign Finance, OCPF, I forget what the acronym stands for, but you can go download all the campaign donation records from Massachusetts, and you look for people's employers as a way to trace those that money back to the interest group, so maybe a utility. But you quickly find that the vast majority of donations come from people who either list no employer or claim to be retired, or so on. So on the level of like Massachusetts state level donations, so not like the Republican governor's PAC or anything like that, but state level donations, there's a lot of unidentified backer. We know the person, but we don't know the entity. So that's right. So it's very hard to say. So, but we can get more into the sources of that legitimacy besides donations. I just want to say the last important thing blocking climate action in Massachusetts is just a lack of transparency in the state house process. And that, combined with the other things we talked about, like lobbying, generates a very uneven playing field, because the opaque process privileges certain kinds of advocacy, like lobbying, over other kinds that are more accessible to you and me or to advocate.
And just, can one of you just, I mean, when you say transparency, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I think the transparency, the clearest example of it is that the a committee meeting behind closed doors makes a decision, and that is not recorded in a way that the public can easily get their hands on. So you cannot, after a decision's been made, you can't go in and talk to people about it. And basically the bills go in, they're hidden in a file folder somewhere, and they die in the basement of the state house on a manila folder, right? And that's because there's no requirement that piece of paper see the light, literally see the light of day. Is that your idea of transparency as well?
Yeah, I think that's right. And there are some other issues as well with testimony being available publicly, with people having time to actually read legislation before it's voted on. But I think the transparency issues really hide one of the overarching problems with the legislature, which is that leadership is really driving decisions throughout the entire process. We've heard from legislators that often the committee votes the way the leadership wants, right? And if no one's able to see how the committee voted or how your legislator voted, it's really hard to pressure them to not do that, because leadership is deciding who's on that committee. And if you're not voting with them, you're probably going to get kicked off the committee, right?
Yeah.
So the transparency is really a way for us, like people, constituents, et cetera, to have more tools to kind of overcome the power of the leadership. But really, the leadership dominance is what's being hidden when we can't see what's going on, or we don't have records of who voted which way.
Right.
And that, I think that leadership dominance is really what, when we think about utilities power or these other industries, right, they pay a lot of lobbyists, and those lobbyists go straight to the top, have nice fancy dinners with the leadership, right? And that's where the influence happens much more than testimony is able to influence, right?
That's right. I mean, it's probably the individual rep has less leverage because of the hierarchical, and I would say, maybe I don't want to be over the top, but the punitive aspect of if you don't play along, right, you got to go along to get along, right? Now we've got new leadership in the state house. I don't know, and that's not to cast aspersions on anyone, but historically, right? I mean, it's a very hierarchical place, and so that kind of issue speaks to things way beyond climate legislation, right? That's a democracy issue, right? It goes to a fundamental thing. Wow. So tell me is there a short, given what you've seen, what can activists do? I mean, what is the place where activists have leverage? I mean, again, the person who's going to show up in that stuffy room there in the state house to give testimony or to support that. Is that all you can do?
Right. So that's a really good question. And we've gotten it a lot now. And sort of one of the first things we always say is whatever leverage you have is going to be collective. Right. So thinking about sometimes. It's easy to get to think about this like, oh, well, what can I do about that? And it just the whole problem feels overwhelming. So the first thing is what can we do about it? And then we certainly can't claim to have a definitive or authoritative answer on that. So we sort of point people to the other people in Massachusetts who are doing, we think are doing good work on these problems. So there are organizations advocating for climate and clean energy policies directly, like 350 Mass, Sunrise, Massachusetts Climate Action Network. There's a lot of
shameless plug.
People.
The Massachusetts Climate Action Network has been pushing for building codes and has had something. So yes, and yes, you so yes. Please continue.
exactly, and you know, and it's not the picture we want to paint is not one of hopelessness because clearly things are moving. It's just that things are moving too slowly. So it's not that. You push and you get nothing back. It's just you're pushing against a big obstacle, and it's slow to move. So, and then the other thing is that joining groups that promote transparency and voting for or working on the campaigns of reps and state senators who will promote transparency. And then the last thing is just for advocates who are already involved. The one thing we hope to contribute is a more systematic understanding of who you're up against. So. It's easy again to think the enemy is the fossil fuel industry, you know, American Petroleum Institute. And American Petroleum Institute does show up, but if you really want to see where the power lies, what our report points at is the utilities. And so understanding them and their business model and what leads them to agree or disagree becomes more important.
Wow. So that's excellent answer, by the way. So in the report, there are several key findings, which I think a whole discussion by itself. Can I invite you guys back to another episode of this show to discuss some of those, what those reports, because I think it now reflects back and forth the things we've talked about here and sort of gives a concreteness, a little granularity to these kind of things that we're talking about. If will you come back to have another discussion?
Definitely. Yeah, we'd be
Absolutely.
Happy to.
All right. Well, look, what we'll do is what I'll do is I'll put up a link to this report and which is actually well written and quite interesting. It'll be on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have a question about the podcast or have suggestions of things we ought to talk about, please send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we ought to be talking about. You're probably listening to the show on your smartphone. Using one of the modern podcast distribution apps, please ask all of your friends to listen to us on their modern podcast distribution app and rate us on Apple Podcasts and whatever place you pick us up. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future. And that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. Well, Trevor Galen, this has been a fascinating conversation. I look forward to continuing it in the near future. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, good talking to you.
Thanks for everyone for listening. Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.